on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football. Welcome to a new season of The Sound of Football. Yeah, thrills, spills and Jimmy Hills will await us over the next 10 months or so.
Jimmy Hill. That was my really bad Jimmy Hill impression.
That was Roland Rat.
Jimmy Hill and Roland Rat are from the same stable.
Oh, are they?
No, very definitely.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't you know that?
No, I didn't know that at all.
No, absolutely. It's a well-known fact.
Actually, you don't see them in the same room together, do you?
No, you don't, although there are other reasons why that's the case.
And, well, today's a special day, isn't it?
It is very special.
Yeah, well, because we've come back a little bit earlier than what we would have normally planned, because we've only been away, really, for about, a month? Not even a month.
World Cup final, just after World Cup final.
And so we thought we'd start our season off today, because today is exactly, we're recording this on Monday night, But it's exactly 5 years to the day that we started this.
To the day.
Mm. Yeah, and of course, back in those days, it was me and you, Terry, and there was some other guy, wasn't there?
Some other guy.
Oh, so if only we knew. If only we could remember that far back.
Yeah, it was... Yeah. I don't know.
Chris, anyway. Do you know who it was?
Hang on. Now the name will come to me in a moment. Just give me a few moments. It'll come back to me.
Yes,
oh, join
us, joining us live from New Zealand. Yes, it's Chris Oakley.
Australia?
Live via satellite from New Zealand. It's Chris Oakley and his orchestra.
From the land of the long white cloud. Hello, Chris. How are you? How are you bearing up in winter there?
Oh, I'm fine. Yes, it's a bit chilly here, you know, being late winter and everything, but it's lovely. Nice to be talking to you again on this, you know, this important occasion in the history of Sound of Football. Oh. How lovely to be with you again.
I know. Well, did you imagine that 5 years ago that you thought, look, if I need to escape, I'll go to the other side of the world. I'll never hear from them again. And that hasn't worked out, has it for you?
I was always kind of hoping I'd be well shot at this tawdry little project by the time, 5 years hence, but I never thought I'd go this far.
So how was your World Cup, Chris? Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. It was a curious experience for me because, of course, I've moved to New Zealand almost 2 years ago now, and so this is the first World Cup I've not experienced from England, and all that goes with it, all your kind of pundits and brightly lit, colourful studios that you see on the BBC and ITV and all that malarkey. It was a bit strange because, of course, New Zealand didn't get to the World Cup, so quite rightly, they're not going to spend any money on any of that kind of shenanigans.
Right.
So all we had was like the corporate sort of, or the standard FIFA feed that they pump out to all four corners of the world, all the countries that don't really want anything much to do with the World Cup. So all we got was 15 minutes of preamble, quick kind of pre-recorded interview with one of the players that's involved in the match, and then straight on to the match. It was very refreshing, actually.
In fairness, it's not too dissimilar. I was in Italy for a week during the World Cup, and obviously Italy had gone home by the time I got out there. We were watching the Sky coverage, and it was pretty much, they would tune in, show some shots to the stadium, maybe an interview, maybe not. Know from time to time for big games they'd wheel out Alessandro Del Piero to talk about the game and then they would just crack on, no studio show or anything like that. Some games there were, but it wasn't anything as lavish, if that's the word I'm looking for, as the UK domestic broadcasters do. It's quite refreshing, actually.
I thought so.
Yeah, I think it's always enlightening when you go away and watch football on another country's television just to see how they actually do it.
I went all the way over to this country so that I could watch football on another telly.
I have actually enjoyed it. I think do you remember the time when England played Greece in that qualifier? It was the one that played at Old Trafford where Beckham scored the goal.
I certainly do. I remember it very well. Yeah.
I was actually in Greece at the time.
I was actually on
Kos, so the island.
You went there at Kos.
I did go there, of course. Hey, great deal. I thought, oh, this is going to be everywhere. This is going to be like, you know, there'll be big blanket Greek coverage of this. And I was talking to the guy who was putting it on, and we were watching it on the Greek channel. And I said, oh, it's getting near a kickoff now, isn't it? I said, oh yeah, they're always late going to matches. So, like, the matches will always have started by the time they got over to it.
I think I quite like that. I do, certainly not better than the whole, you know, welcome back, 2.5 hours before kickoff. Oh,
let's go pitch side and have a word with Steve McManaman.
It's worse than going to the cinema watching a football match on television. He's like, get on with the fucking movie.
Who did the official feed have as their sort of like punditry or their go to guys for insight?
Well, they didn't have any pundits as such. It basically, what I say, you got the preamble, 15 minutes of sort of pre-recorded stuff, interviews, and then straight to the match. And at which point you'd have had probably a British commentator. Ironically, I think the first match in the opening ceremony, we had John Helm. Once of Yorkshire TV back in the 70s and 80s, who's still a tremendous commentator, I have to say. He was wonderful.
The Helmmeister.
The Helmmeister, yes. And then, unfortunately, things deteriorated quite rapidly when we got Peter Dreary, and I can't be dealing with that guy. I'm sorry.
Peter Dreary doing the world feed. I don't know whether you remember, Graham, but when we stayed up during the marathon,
Super Saturday, yeah.
The final game between Japan and Ivory Coast was on ITV, and there is no way on this planet that they were ITV. That was an ITV broadcast. No. There was no colour guy, so it was just the one commentator, and it was definitely a FIFA feed guy.
I don't know. I mean, like, I've got so used to hearing co-commentary now that it just seemed rather refreshingly.
I like it personally.
Yeah,
you do get that when I watch a lot of as you know, I watch a lot of foreign football.
Yes.
And so you'll often find a BT and ESPN, they won't run to a summariser. They'll just have the same, just the one guy doing a lot of games. So like French League games on ESPN, for example, at 4 o'clock on a Sunday.
They don't have an equivalent of Jerry Armstrong. Yeah, Spanish League.
They've not gone in for anything like it. Some of the bigger games they obviously do, but a lot of the time you don't. So you get used to it. And in Germany, they don't have a summariser at all. They're just beginning to phase one in. Jens Lehmann, believe it or not. But he comes in at specific points, you know, there's no conversational aspect to it. He'll come in and add something, you know, that he's been analysing, and, you know, they'll have graphics in that. And that's quite a new thing.
They're a bit like the sort of third man thing in the cricket.
Yeah, that's right. Or if you remember the commentary from, well, when I say remember, you wouldn't remember because it was a long time ago. But if you remember watching old broadcasts from Mexico in 1970, they did have a summariser on, but he would only come in, you know, every 15 minutes or something like that, to sort of like, you know, summarise, you know, the game. Yeah. And then that would be, we'd never hear from him again, or at least not for another 10, 15 minutes. It's not a list sort of like, you know, constant sort of like droning drivel that we have to do now.
I think they sort of tended to pipe in somebody like Derek Dugan, who was back in the studio anyway, or something like that, didn't they? It was like, say something for 10 seconds and then we'll get rid of you and then we can carry on with the commentary, wasn't it?
Yeah, I seem to recall Bobby Moore doing one during Mexico 70, when he was still out there. I mean, when they'd gone. It's quite a novel approach.
I liked it. I mean, I'm all for it. But the only problem is, when you get a commentator like Peter Drury. He's just, he has to talk the whole time, and damn it, he does. He will fill every second with speech if he has
to. I suppose that's the thing. Is that he's like coming straight as well from ITV. He's got to keep on selling you the game, isn't he?
I think there is definitely a house style, isn't there? I mean, with radio commentators, ex-radio commentators, I think tend to be quite verbose for obvious reasons, because instinctively that they are,
and continually telling you what you can see.
But there is often. I mean, what I think that, I don't know how we got onto this topic, because I'm pretty certain we were going to do a season preview. But anyway, while we're here, I think the thing that annoys me about modern commentators is that there is far too much. There is too much commentary. And offering their opinions on the game were not necessarily enough, you know, who's actually got the ball at that time. I mean, you don't get not sort of pure commentary. And I think if I wanted to change anything, that would be the most important thing that I would change, is just maybe just sort of like stick to the matter at hand, you know, tell us what's actually happening rather than necessarily adding your own colour. That's what your summariser is there for.
So, one final word on the subject, Chris. I mean, like did you feel that your World Cup was lacking because of the coverage? Or was it just...
Not because
just
of the coverage,
different?
No. In fact, ironically, and this is a sign of the times, is that I kind of made up for any lack of... anything really, just by being on Twitter, because it just seemed like the whole of the world was on Twitter, and so therefore I just interacted with everyone and was just, I mean, you know full well, Graham, I mean, we were just kind of like throwing gags out for
but
fun.
There is that,
that's kind of what we were all doing, so it was just great. It was
a good World Cup for that, I think, really.
It was the best Twitter World Cup. I mean, immediately you're saying the second Twitter World Cup, but it was better than 2010. But everyone's much more comfortable in their own Twitter skins 4 years later. It was good fun.
Basically walking around in their Twitter underpants.
But Twitter is walking around naked, isn't it? I mean, that's what it's looking at, walking around naked.
I'd like to advise
virtually speaking.
I'm fully clothed whenever I tweet. Apart from that time when I was watching football when I wasn't clothed. Which was quite good, because England lost that day.
But let's not,
would have set an uncomfortable precedent.
Let's not get into that.
We were going to do a season preview. Sorry there, Chris. I think we should start.
We've got 20 minutes. Let's do it, by George.
Why not? I mean, that would do the whole season. I'll start with you, Chris, as you're our honoured guest on our birthday party. I'll open up some virtual cake soon.
No beer.
I'm too excited. Do you want to go and get some beer?
Why don't you cue Chris in and I'll go and get some? He's in the fridge.
It's in the fridge over there.
Is there a bottle opener over there?
Yeah.
All right. Have one for me.
Okay. So Chris, what are you looking forward to in the next season?
This sounds a bit perverse, but one of the things I always look forward to when the new season, domestic season starts, is actually seeing how well the promoted teams get on. And I don't know if it's just kind of out of wanting them to do shockingly badly and be thrashed in every game, or whether, obviously, you want maybe at least one of those promoted teams to do really well, because it just kind of upsets the status quo and shakes a few of the more established teams out of their coma, as it were, their sense of normality. But that I always kind of focus on the new teams coming up, but maybe it's me getting old and feeling a bit withered about the whole thing, but it just seems like a lot of the teams that come up now just don't look like they're capable of staying up, unfortunately. But I mean, that's probably unfair. I think what's really quite appetizing about this season is going by what we had last season in the Premier League, the fact that it was so open and it was, frankly, a championship that could have been won by Man City or Liverpool or not Man United. It was probably the most open Premier League we've had for a long while, as everybody knows. And the thought of getting that again this season is very appealing indeed.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's interesting what you say about new clubs coming up, because I always think that it's a win-win situation there, isn't it, really? Because if they get hammered, then that's quite fun to watch. But then again, if they cause some real upsets, that's also quite fun to watch. What you don't want is you want some side that really is just going to go out there and finish 17th. Yeah, that's not what you want, is it?
No, absolutely not.
And look what Palace did. At least they almost finished top half.
Yeah, 11th. Absolutely. Yeah. Mid-table.
Yeah.
Mid-table Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Indeed.
That's exactly what you need, isn't there?
Who knew? Yeah, no. Yeah,
four places behind United.
That feels very good. And also, I mean, we did it with a degree of style as well and panache. We had an influence on the title race.
Surprising style and panache. No one had really thought was gonna happen there.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a certain elan to the way that they played, despite the fact that they were, you know, largely ultra defensive. I think that maybe. It's not quite Tony Pulis's Stoke. But whether or not that will change this season, maybe this season we will be Tony Pulis's Stoke. Maybe that's how he sees it going.
I think he's looking at and thinking that Thought and Heath is a bit more, you know, a bit more high class than that upmarket
than Stoke. I don't know what that says about. Actually, I do know what that says about Stoke. It's not much.
Stoke, you know, I'm only joking.
We're only joking, Stoke. Yeah. You're welcome to Thornton Heath anytime and go, oh my God.
It was an amazing turnaround, the Palace, though. I mean, I was as surprised as anybody about. But I was just genuinely really pleased for them because they got this guy in and they changed everything around and didn't just sort of avoid relegation, but played with real sort of vigour, which I wish I could say the same for my own team, but that's another story.
Well, and then I suppose now would be a good time to tell that story. What are your hopes, dreams, and fears? Are you excited about Ener Valencia, or do you think this is going to be another one of these hideous post World Cup follies that we, you know?
I'm rather excited by the prospect of him playing for West Ham. I'm not that excited by the prospect of what West Ham will do to him, because I think he will just get locked into some hideous formation or tactical arrangement that Sam Allardyce has dictated will be, you know, suitable for how West Ham should play, and he'll probably be never seen again after like the second or third match. He'll just get sort of swallowed up into this grey mass that never really seems to achieve very much these days for West Ham. I mean, I'm amazed that West Ham finished as high as they did last year, just below mid-table. Although feasibly, it has to be said that with a couple of games to go, we could still have been relegated. So that shows perhaps how close the bottom end of the table was. But I'm pleased as ever. I mean, since Gold and Sullivan have taken over at West Ham, they've certainly put their hands in their pockets, to use the old phrase, and bought a few players over the last few seasons. So they've never found wanting where that's concerned. But it's just, I think this is the year when Allardyce will go, and I think he will go before Christmas. So that will make for an exciting post-Christmas period. But I just think that West Ham will end up in a bit of a rut. And as I say, all these new players that we've brought in, of which there have been several, either won't gel or they just won't fit into this somewhat defensive, containing style that Sam Allardyce has. And there'll be mass discontent all round. And then probably Sam will go, I think, at some point in the season. There you go.
Are you going to finish higher than Villa, though?
I should think most people will finish higher than Villa. The way things are going.
I don't know.
Sorry, Villa.
I haven't looked recently. I think they may have made some signing, which may have been vaguely impressive. But I think, generally speaking, they are in limbo, Aston Villa, aren't they? It's not. I don't think the prospects for them aren't good, are they?
I don't think you can even say it's transition, can you? Really?
No, it's not transition. No, it's genuine limbo. It's purgatory. I mean, they're of an owner who wants to sell, and they don't appear to have anybody who wants to buy, and they've got a manager who seems to have just ground to a halt. Really, there's no momentum whatsoever to him. A promising career snuffed out, but he's still there, and I assume he's still there because there's so little ambition from the board level that they don't have the drive to even think about replacing him, and they wouldn't know who to replace him with. That in itself brings some stability, and maybe Paul Lambert will eventually sort of rediscover his mojo, but you suspect he probably really needs to... It's that paralysis at the club that has kept him there, because really, by rights, he should be gone. But
be gone. Yeah.
I mean, any other manager you would think at any other club would be gone after this, but I mean, it would be a disaster if Villa were to be relegated, but at least it would be interesting.
Yes, it would be. I'll be interested to see what happens to this season is, of course, Southampton, though.
It's Ronald Koeman, isn't it, who's the coach?
And just it's going to be an unrecognisable team that that he comes out with next week when they start.
Will he have a team?
Just about. Well, yeah, not quite Blackpool, but it's not far off. I think that we won't. We won't really see Southampton. Or the danger is that Southampton won't really get into gear until October, November time, which is when, you know, after the transfer window is done and when the players gel and the squad gels, because they'll obviously be bringing new players in. But this is, it's organised chaos there, really. I mean, losing all those players in such a short space of time, having to then replace them without necessarily having to make panic buys, which you can often find yourself doing, then wasting your money, spending lots of money on players who, for whatever reason, it's not working out for. They've got a new manager as well. I think things could go horribly wrong for Southampton.
Well, I mean,
or not, but I mean, it's potentially something that could go wrong.
The news is the owner now doesn't want to put any more money into the club.
Well, don't need to right now. Yeah. They've just made a mad, big fat wedge out of it. But yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, I mean, they've made some significant investments in that club, I suppose, and they probably feel it's time for a bit of payback. But I don't know whether or not that's the way to do it. I wouldn't be surprised if Southampton dropped like a stone this season.
Yes, and
how, that's possible. Yeah,
and when will they stop dropping though?
Well, that's the other thing, of course, because that's exactly what. Well, it's not exactly what, but I mean, of course, they dropped like a stone when they were last relegated. They went down to the third tier. We'd like to think that the owners have got a bit more about them and that they won't have the same financial problems, but you do wonder, you do worry that they've suddenly grown so quickly and then it's all fallen apart. I mean, it's a cautionary tale, really, for clubs that operate a very vibrant youth system, that suddenly you can find yourself stripped of all your best players within a matter of weeks. And then you don't have the time to recover and regroup and decide who the right players to bring in and replace them are. Oftentimes, these players can't be replaced. Not with, you know, because there's no value that you can place on them. So I think that it's something for football clubs to think about before they get too carried away bringing in, you know, young players, because they think, well, you know, they're just going to go one summer and then we'll end up like Southampton.
Yeah,
food for thought.
Playing devil's advocate, as I say, from the point of view of the owners, you've got to sort of think suddenly all this money flashed before you. It's probably the first time you've had that potential for generating some money for decades, possibly, and the temptation to sell. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in their shoes, but to some extent I can understand why they've done it. But of course, it doesn't, as you say, Terry, it doesn't do the club any good in the short term, because suddenly all this talent's suddenly gone. You've got to reconstruct practically from scratch, such as the extent of, you know, the way that all the players have been sold off. So it's I can kind of see both sides of the coin.
I don't think you can blame necessarily the board that harshly, because I mean, you know, I don't think you should blame a board for, you know, conceding to the wishes of players who want to move on. I mean, you know, I think it's reasonable to allow professionals to do that. It smacks of inevitability, which is, you know, arguably worse. You can't point the finger at the board and say, "Well, you've messed things up." Say, "Well, they haven't." What's happened, however, is, you know, bigger clubs have come in with much more money, and they've had a moral imperative, probably, to allow them to go and pursue their careers.
Well, I think we've spoken quite a bit about English football. Let's widen our sphere a bit more. Chris, are you going to be watching the French football this season? I mean, like, can you get hold of it out there?
No, unfortunately not. At the start of last season, there was this big kind of hoo-ha about the TV rights over here, because one of the national sort of channels, I suppose the equivalent of the BBC, really had access to the Premier League and I think one or two other things. And this new channel came along called Summit Sports. And it's basically some entrepreneur, some guy who just wanted to get into broadcasting, had lots of money, and he basically jumped in and grabbed the rights to Premier League football. And suddenly there was no Premier League on the main channels. But the reason I say that is because in the process of setting up this new channel, the guy who runs it has also grabbed the rights to Bundesliga. He did this at the start of last season. Bundesliga, Argentinian First Division, and Scottish football, and also the League Cup. I was actually, believe it or not, You may find this hard to believe, but I was actually watching Carlisle versus Derby only an hour or so ago before we came online. Who'd have thought? So far away from the UK, but this channel has got the football rights from those countries. Sadly, not Ligue 1, I'm sorry to say, but looking forward to seeing the aforementioned football from different countries though as the season starts.
Oh, good news, good news. So you're going to be getting into the Bundesliga this year then, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I caught a little bit of it last year. It was great. I mean, it's lovely just that somebody over here clearly feels that there's an audience for it, and because there obviously is a large kind of expat community here in New Zealand, so there's always going to be some people wanting to watch football of that ilk. So, yeah, it's great.
Obviously, kick-off times notwithstanding, of course.
Indeed, yeah.
Are you going to be catching in the A-League? I know, obviously, you're on the wrong island to watch it live, but, I mean, are you going to take an interest in the A-League this season, or is it still...
I saw a fair bit of that last season as well, obviously following Willington Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
They had an interesting season last year, something of a kind of transitional season, let's put it that way. I enjoy watching A-League. Last season I had the joy of watching Emil Heskey and all these other stars. I'm sort of gradually getting into it. I mean, it, as you say about the time difference and everything, it suits better for me to be able to watch A-League, actually probably more than, say, the Premier League or anything else. But so it's inevitable that I see some of that, and I enjoy A-League. It's great.
Good, good man. Well, you can be our A-League GTG then.
Yeah, I think Can do.
Better
break that slowly to Gary Andrews.
He won't be happy about that. I think he saw himself as being out of the sound of football's A-League GTG. But yeah. No. He's going to have to move out there if he wants that.
He's got to be on the... Yeah, we want feet on the ground, don't we?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, indeed.
Yeah. There you go. And next year we've got the FIFA Under 20, I think it's the Under 20 World Championships over here, so World Cup, whatever it's called over here in New Zealand, so you'll definitely have a man on the ground.
That is very cool indeed. That's very cool indeed. Yeah, I wish we could host one of those tournaments over here in England. That would be very cool indeed. I'd love to do that, go there. That's awesome. That is, and I mean, obviously, only up the road from where you are, Australia are hosting the Asian Championship, the Asian Cup in early January, just a mere thrice from where you are.
A mere thrice
in Australia.
A mere bus ride.
Hop there on the bus, eh?
No, I'm very much looking forward to that as well. And obviously, the African Cup next year, but that's not necessarily pertaining to what we were just saying. But
it's all happening in the next season, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's all grist on the mill, isn't it? Yeah.
But I mean, presumably, Terry, you're sort of looking forward to the Bundesliga season coming up and everything. So what's your sort of outline? I'm just curious to hear. Sorry to jump in and pretend I'm hosting.
No, it's fine.
Jump away.
I like the big chair, but it's still got your groove in it here, Chris. Yeah.
That's made Terry spill his beer.
Yes,
sorry, Jan.
Tell us all about this season's Bundesliga.
Oh, well, same as last season, really.
What, Bayern?
I think Dortmund will be slightly better, although they lost 4-0 to Liverpool in a pre-season friendly yesterday, which is kind of, okay.
Yeah. When's Royce back?
Royce is back.
Oh, he's back
now. He's back now. And Mkhitaryan looks like he's improved. Chiro Immobile is coming.
Hummels is the new captain now.
Hummels is now the captain. Announced as captain on the same day that TalkSport reported that he was very likely to be joining Arsenal. So I don't know how that works. It's interesting. Hamburg look like they're getting their shit together finally. They're bringing in Valent Bayrami and... Nikolai Müller from Mainz, and Leverkusen are going to be a team to look at. They've Çalhanoğlu has come from Hamburg, Sydney Sam's come in. Oh no, he went to Schalke, so he's gone out. And they've made some decent. So in fact, it could be sort of like the usual top four. But I think the thing about the Bundesliga is it's the first season after the World Cup win, and I think that there'll be a certain swagger and renewed interest. In that league. This is probably the time when I'll start to lose interest in it because everyone else is now paying attention to it.
Yeah.
So I'll go off and go off and to they've sold out. Bundesliga sold out. It's way too commercial.
Worst thing they could have done.
Yeah. I see. You're going to start watching Swiss football. You're going to
find something much more indie than the German Bundesliga. Yeah. They're playing a Swiss league at the Town and Country Club in London. It's going to.
We laugh now.
We laugh, but it's true. We laugh, but we don't know why we're laughing because it's actually true.
Thanks a lot as well, listeners, for those of you who have been with us for the last 5 years, as we start our sixth season. Yeah,
yep. Coming for your next gen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Alive. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that is a long. The Simpsons doesn't have anything to worry about at the moment. But I think like 5 completed seasons and a 6th one just starting.
Yeah, 200th episode round the corner.
Yeah, 200th episode. Yeah, if you think we haven't been looking back too much in this episode because we like to look forward, but we've got our 200th episode coming up, and I think that's coming up at the end of September.
Mm.
So we'll be hopefully have Chris back again.
On
the satellite feed. Jan will be back from his holiday. Jan will be back from his holiday next week. So if you're wondering where he was, listeners, that's it. He's there. He's sunning himself in Portugal. And hopefully,
Jan, it's a way of the world that you vacate your seat and somebody comes in and fills it. I'm sorry, that's how it is.
Mm-hmm. It is the way of the world. He's used to these things. I mean, hopefully, a week in the sun will chill him out a bit more, and he'll come back full of the joys of spring.
Yeah, get used to it. Get prepared for a pasting he's going to get at Sound of Football Top Trumps, which I assume will be resuming from next week.
Of course, good stuff. New season. Yeah, new season. Same old game.
Same old game. Yeah, still carrying it over. We had entertained notions of actually doing a big marathon Top Trumps podcast and finishing it all off, but that never happened, which is cool. We'll just carry on until it finishes.
Yeah.
Because we have got the new pack ready to go.
The new pack that's going to become quite out of date.
But it's going to be really out of date. That's how we actually get around this. Thanks again to Kyle Barber for sending us.
It's good though because it keeps the deck sort of humorously out of date, but not that far out of date that it's actually nostalgia.
So otherwise we'll be encroaching on the attic.
And you don't want to encroach in the attic.
You don't want to be encroaching in anyone's attic, particularly Oakley's and Rich Johnson's attic. That's not to be. Listen to the Football Attic podcast, by the way. It's very good, listeners. Very good indeed.
Yes.
You have to say it, Terry, honestly.
If a little self-serving.
Well,
I live for the nostalgia of Scott Parker coming up in the Top Trumps pack. I just think that's the funniest thing ever.
I think I should actually recolour the card and put a black border around it so for when people hold it up. You can always tell when someone's got it. Anyway, I think we're going to wrap this episode up now. We'll carry on with our birthday celebrations, and we'll be back next week with Jan, as I say, and we'll be seeing Chris again soon. And if you want to hear more of Chris, then yes, by all means, tune in to the Football Attic. Get that in on your iTunes or
Spell on Football Radio. Absolutely. Yeah.
So from me, Graham Sedgwick, from Chris Oakley,
and thank you for having me.
And from Terry the Villain, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.